I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 191 for the weekend starting 22 September 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, DStv Now coming to all multi-choice subscribers.
Also this week, Liquid Telecom launches Quese Play in South Africa. Dealing with the out-of-bundle conundrum, a look back at the big iPhone launch, and Google's deal with HTC.
Interesting stuff. It's Friday, and that means time to talk tech.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. Nice summery day out here.
Yeah, summer is upon us. It is fantastic.
I believe officially the spring equinox today.
Oh, it is nice.
Which means the day is another just as long as the night.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just need those first thunderstorms now.
Yeah, I predict maybe 3 weeks and we'll get it. But the smells outside have been amazing. Yeah, the trees blossoming, all the flowers coming out. It's, yeah, spring is in the air, so to speak. I love
it. It's great stuff. We were just saying, it's only 3 months to Christmas. Can you believe it?
Can you? Yeah, no, that's... You gotta start saving for those Christmas presents.
Yeah, that iPhone. Which is launching just before point. Christmas, of course, yeah. Let's do our quiz. Do you want to do the first question?
Yeah, sure. First question in this week's quiz. Which South African retailer conducted a trial of Bitcoin payments at the point of sale?
Uber has been banned from operating in which major city from the end of this month?
Third question. Which technology industry mogul this week firmly denied he wants to run for US president?
Yeah, right. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella is publishing his first book next week. What's it called?
And the last question in this week's quiz. Which major retailer in the US has filed for bankruptcy, citing e-commerce rivals as the reason?
That's our quiz. We'll get back to the answers to that quiz at the end of the show. Although I suspect we'll be answering many of the questions during the course of our discussion today. But let's jump right into, let's not jump into the news yet. Let's talk about some of the podcasts that we've been doing on Tech Central over the last few weeks. And we've had some great interviews on our Tech Central podcast series. If you don't subscribe, go check it out in your favorite podcatcher. Just search Tech Central. You'll find it there. It's got a red background. The show has a black background to differentiate the two. We've had some great interviews. My favorite interview so far on that Tech Central podcast series has been the interview I did on Monday this week with Fazam Isani, who's the blockchain lead at RMB. Absolutely fascinating discussion. We spoke for an hour and a half. Now, don't let that put you off. It's an hour and a half of riveting listening.
Oh, it was fantastic.
It really explains
it. Yeah, it was good to get some deep insights there.
And we talk about everything from, he spoke about everything from, what is money? What is a cryptocurrency? Getting down to brass tacks and really explaining it in layman's terms, which I thought was really useful. And then talking about why this stuff is so revolutionary, what it means for central banks, what it means for monetary policy, what it means for fiat currencies. His view is that crypto is going to destroy fiat currencies, so government-backed money, like the rand, like the U.S. dollar. He believes it's going to go away. This is revolutionary stuff.
No, it is absolutely fantastic.
Really interesting discussion, and it raises all sorts of questions. I mean, his view was that even the concept of a nation state could go away. He said the concept is not that old, This type of monetary system that's being developed here has the potential to reshape our social order. So it was a fascinating discussion.
Worth the listen.
Even if only a portion of what he thinks is going to happen happens, it's going to change the world. But that was a great discussion. Had a couple of other interesting chats. I spoke to Ryan Solovey, who's heading up Quese Play, which we're going to talk about in the show today. Really interesting chat about the Roku box that they've brought to South Africa. But I won't say too much more on that because we're going to be talking about that during the show today. And I had a great interview with James Herbst and Duarte da Silva, who are respectively the CEO and chairman of Huge Group, to get an insight into where that business is going. Duarte da Silva, a highly respected businessman. He used to be an IT analyst at Merrill Lynch back in the 1990s. And he produced fantastic reports. When I was still a green around the gills reporter, I used to go and sit in his office in downtown Joburg, and he used to take me through the earnings reports of companies like Comparex and QData and similar businesses. Really fascinating insights into those companies because, he had a way of producing these reports that were really easy to understand and fun to read as well.
And is that why you love them so much? Because whenever you analyze them, I can see the glee in your face. No, I'm just kidding. But, the art of reading those reports, what a
Indeed. So he went on to a career launching a bank here called, or a financial services group called Macquarie First South. And he exited that business, I think, about 2 years ago now, and he joined Huge Group as chairman. And they've got some interesting things planned. So if you're interested in finding out more about that company, go have a listen to that podcast. I enjoyed that discussion. And we've got some more great podcasts coming up, so keep listening. But let's get down to our news. And I went to MultiChoice yesterday for a media update on the. It was largely to do with content, so probably not directly relevant to our audience. But from a technology perspective, they made a couple of announcements. New HD channels coming to MultiChoice, for example. BBC Brit is now going to be in HD, so you can watch all the all the Top Gear repeats in full HD. plenty of those repeats
yeah.
And they've also announced that they are going to be bringing DStv Now, which is their streaming platform, to all MultiChoice subscribers. Initially it was only available to premium subscribers, and then quite recently they announced it was going to be launched for Compact and Extra customers, now called Compact Plus, so that's now available for those on those bouquets. Now they're bringing it to all the others, right down to the Access bouquet, which I think costs $100 a month. Obviously, you don't get access to all the channels. You get access to the channels that are in that bouquet.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're bringing all of those down. Also, they're also ramping up the HD side of things, so the Super Sport channels are all going HD. And
even Super Sport 75. Yuckske.
Yeah, they are, believe it or not, there's 12 Super Sport channels now.
Wow.
They're going to bring more and more HD to that platform as well. Interested, no ANN7 on DStv now. I wonder if that's ever going to come. Can't say I missed it on there. Some interesting developments happening with DStv now. They're clearly putting a lot of investment in there. I did ask Graham Cumming, who's the head of DStv Digital Media, whether there are any plans now that Showmax has been integrated into MultiChoice, whether they will merge DStv Now and Showmax at some point. He said there are no immediate plans to do that, but it's something that may happen down the line.
Well, it makes sense to have your technology that deliver that content be the best version of the technology. Mm. So whether it's Showmax's or DStv's, to have a single platform makes sense, but I guess it's still early days in that transition.
Yeah, indeed.
But I would like to see a much stronger offering from them having moved Showmax back into this table.
Yeah, but I think I'm chatting to Mark Rayner, who's the CEO of MultiChoice South Africa, at the same event, and his view is that this market has become so interesting, so competitive, and there's so much happening. And right next on our show notes is our segue here is Quest Play, and they've announced when was it about 10 days ago now, that they're bringing a Roku box to South Africa. I don't know if you've had a chance to play with a Roku box before.
I still have an old Roku tube somewhere in my house. It was fantastic music streaming player for me. And it kind of opened my eyes to like this, the first kind of diddly connected devices that can bring you. I mean, that was just an audio device, but obviously the video side of it.
Yes.
It's a great company. I love their products.
Yeah. So go have a listen to that podcast we did with Ryan Solovey if you're interested in the real detail on Quest Air Play. But it's an interesting box. I've got one to play with and plugged it in, and it's nice. It's a nice interface. It's from what I can tell, it's the basic Roku interface, but it's been customized a little bit by. So it's their store that you get on there. So at the moment, well, last time I looked, which was about 6 days ago probably, they had about 110 channels or apps on there that you fire up and watch content. So they've got things like TED, they've got Netflix, they have an exclusive relationship with Netflix, so
that's cool.
You can subscribe in Rand. The prices are slightly higher than the dollar prices, but they've said that they're going to work to adjust those prices so that they're in line with the dollar pricing. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole bunch of weird content on there, which I suppose you can expect on a Roku box. But on a Roku box overseas, there are thousands of channels or apps you can choose from. So they've only launched 100 or so far, but they say that they have every intention of rolling out up to 1,000, possibly more, on the Roku box quite rapidly. So
but all under their branded.
It's all curated by them. Yeah.
Okay.
So I was quite interested to see Twit on there, This Week in Tech, which is a big American tech podcast network. I'd love to see our podcast platform on there. I think I must have a conversation with them at some point about that.
Yeah, that's a very good idea.
Some great content. I actually used it to watch quite a lot of TED videos, which I hadn't seen before. Those are always fantastic. If you find the right content, some of those TED videos are mind blowing.
And does the remote actually have the labeled buttons, Netflix, YouTube, and Red Bull TV, and Quest Air, obviously.
Quest Air Play, yeah. So what they're planning to do, Quest Air Play, Liquid Telecom, which owns this, launched Quest Air TV, which is a direct-to-home satellite service, which is available in a number of African territories, not South Africa. So that's your typical multi-choice DSTV type of setup. Where you get a set-top box, you put a satellite dish on your roof, you subscribe. What they're planning to introduce is a Quest Air TV service streaming on the box. So you will get those channels that they offer through their DTH satellite service in South Africa as an option on the box. That's going to be launched very soon, I'm told. I don't have a specific date for that yet. Nice. So that'll be a subscription service. It won't be free.
Sure.
You'll pay for it like you pay for Netflix on this platform. And you know, once it's available, you'll be able to access all of the channels that they have access to. So that includes, you know, series channels, movies channels, sports channels, etc., etc. So that'll really add value to this box once that's launched.
Yeah,
and it's coming soon.
Especially if they keep adding more content, more channels to it.
Yeah. I did wonder why they launched Quest Air Play now rather than waiting before they could launch Quest Air TV as part of the solution. So the only pay thing on this at the moment is Netflix, which seemed a bit odd to me. And then I realized, wait a minute, Telkom has announced they're launching this TV Lit 100 C-Box, TVC 100, whatever it's called, sometime in October, I think it is. So I suspect that they brought forward their launch plans to accommodate to get into market before Telkom.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this box is going to go head to head with Telkom's Android box.
Oh yeah, definitely. But the fact that it's a Roku branded device, I mean, I think that puts a lot of credibility behind it. And you know, like I said before, if they continually work on those channels and make more content available around it, you know, just make it more, I guess, make it more exciting, you know, with new revisions or updates.
The basis is there now. I mean, you can see they've built a solid foundation, and now they need to build on it. YouTube is on there, for example. So that's obviously a huge, a very positive free platform for people to get access. My only criticism of it, and maybe there are accessories, I don't know what the Roku ecosystem of hardware looks like, but the box comes with a very easy to use remote, but to type into YouTube to search for video is quite painful.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's a Roku branded keyboard that you could buy that you could connect to this thing. I would assume there is such a product.
Maybe even a generic Bluetooth keyboard should work. Or
it might.
Would
I don't
have
know.
Maybe does it have USB ports in the back?
I think it has a USB port, if I'm not mistaken. Unfortunately, I don't have the box here.
Interesting. No, it's definitely well worth looking into if you can do, because you make a good point. I mean, you know, you have a connected TV, but
you need a keyboard. Yeah. So I think maybe they missed a trick there. You can get very nice solutions with a remote on one side, a keyboard, and flip it over, and a keyboard on the other
side. That's what I've got for my TV, but I've got a computer hooked up. But without a keyboard, it's...
Yeah.
It doesn't navigate the content.
It's a bit difficult to search. Yeah.
Even Netflix. I mean, if you want to search something that you haven't, you don't want to be clicking through each of those categories manually.
Yes, indeed. The remote, I mean, don't get me wrong, the remote is very easy to use. I mean, you pick this thing up and it's so obvious what do you do with this thing? They've done amazing work with simplifying it. I think far too many manufacturers, especially if you look at TV manufacturers, you look at the remotes these things come with. I mean, they've got buttons on there that you'll never know what they do.
Program.
And it's actually, I think it's an art creating a remote control that's really easy to use.
Yeah.
I think MultiChoice has done a very good job with their DSTV remote. I mean, that thing is super easy to use.
But I mean, they were able to develop it for their platform as opposed to a generic.
That's true.
But like you said, I mean, it's easy enough. It's just the only thing that's missing, I think I agree with you, is that keyboard.
Yeah.
You know, you want to do some searching.
Yeah. So it's available now from selected stores, and it's the retail footprint's going to grow. And it costs 1,600 Rand. So it's not the cheapest set-top box, but it's certainly cheaper than an Apple TV, and it's much cheaper than an Apple TV, and it does 1080p HD, which is good enough for most people, for now anyway. So it's Quest Air Play, and it's an interesting addition into this market. We've already seen a number of companies fall by the wayside in this space, and I think coming to market with a box is the right approach.
Yeah, exactly. Give some people something to plug into their TV. Because like the rest of us, the only way we can get some of this stuff is to have a computer connected. And that's not a viable solution for anybody, really, unless you're a geek.
Indeed. Indeed. If you've got a 4 meg connection at home, they say this will work fine. Obviously, fiber's best.
Fiber's always
best. Yeah, fiber's always best if you don't want buffering. But Quesit Play, it's an interesting new addition into this market. And I look forward to the launch of Quesit Play or Quesit TV, because that will bring some real competition, I think, to MultiChoice for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
We're ready at our first ad break. We'll be back right after this.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
So I wanted to chat a bit about out-of-bundle rates. It's it's a bit of a hornet's nest, this one. The 2 rand a megabyte for mobile out-of-bundle data seems to be slowly disappearing from this market, although I know there are still operators out there that do charge it. But Cell C announcing on some of its bigger plans just over the last week or so that they are going to be cutting out-of-bundle rates, I think, from 1 rand 10 a megabyte to 15 cents.
What? That's a massive drop.
That's a massive drop. Now, 15 cents works out to roughly 150 rand a gigabyte. The headline rate, in-bundle rate, for a gigabyte of data on Vodacom is 150 rand. So the out-of-bundle rate on Cell C is now the same as the in-bundle rate on Vodacom, at least the headline rate. Now, yes. Vodacom has systems now that give you discounts based on who you are and what time of the day it is. And
which is the first trick you need to get through, to figure out which package you need. Yes. Which it shouldn't be like that. Just give me my data, let me pay for it at a good price.
Yeah. So 15 cents a meg, this really is an aggressive move. And I don't know why it's taking so long for these mobile operators to deal with out-of-bundle. It's just, I mean, surely you charge them the same price for out-of-bundle as you charge for in-bundle, and the problem's solved.
Yeah.
If you're buying...
I mean, data is data, right? I mean, the properties doesn't change of data based on where it comes from.
Yeah, it just strikes me as pure profiteering by these operators. I mean, if you go to... if you buy a bigger data bundle, then you can expect a lower in-bundle data rate. Sure. But if you've purchased that bigger data bundle and you use it all up, keep it at that same price. I mean, you're obviously making a profit from it.
I'm your customer. I'm already spending money on this data. Give me the benefit of the doubt and then let me reap some benefit from these exorbitant fees we have to pay.
So if you buy a 10 gigabyte data bundle, for example, and the effective in-bundle rate is 20 cents a megabyte, when I go out of bundle, don't change the 20 cent per megabyte to 2 rand a megabyte. Keep it at 20 cents.
Yeah.
Problem solved. I don't see what the big issue is here, except for the fact that they are able to profit from their customers who don't realize they've gone out of bundle, and then they're using high-priced out-of-bundle data, and they're taking advantage of their customers.
Yeah,
it seems like an easy one to solve.
It does seem like an easy one to solve, but I think we have been seeing this for a long time, that I guess the data, where the operators can make money on the data, is kind of the last frontier of how they can make money on the current system. Calls have obviously dropped, by the way. When was the last time you looked at your phone, the number of minutes you've got? I think I've got like 600 minutes left or something.
I've got, on the plan I'm on, I've got unlimited minutes. I just
But that's also, that has become a little bit of a kind of irrelevant aspect. So, I mean, minutes doesn't matter anymore.
No.
But, and everybody moving to data, obviously, you know, that's like I said, that's where I think they still make the last bit of cash, you know, for those heavy data spenders. But it shouldn't be like that, you know. If you don't have your trust with your customer, they're going to go elsewhere. And that's what I've been liking what Cell C is doing, because they seem to be doing the moves that is the best move for the customer rather than the best move for them as a business.
Yes.
And that makes me look at them and say, they've got my interest at heart. Maybe I should look there.
Mm. Yeah. I'd I hate regulation. I hate the regulator getting involved in doing these things. But maybe ICASA needs to say, guys, you need to do this, otherwise we're going to regulate you. There is no sense whatsoever in charging more for out-of-bundle data when you buy a bundle. Sure. If you don't buy a bundle at all, then you know, set a rate. And it could be a rand a megabyte or even 2 rand a megabyte, which I think is profiteering.
Yeah.
But consumers understand the concept of bundles. So you buy a bundle, you know, buy it every month. If you go out of bundle, then you pay the same price.
Yeah, exactly. Don't change the benchmark just because I've depleted my cap.
Yes. Yeah, and you end up penalizing people. And people are scared to go out of bundle. They're scared to use the internet because, oh my word, I've only got this much data left. And they don't, you know, and then, but if people think, or they know that, you know, if they run out of that bundle, they're going to keep paying the same price for that out of bundle data, they probably use the internet more.
Exactly. It's good for our economy. Run with it.
Yeah.
And bill me appropriately at the end of the month.
Yeah, indeed. So that's our brief out-of-bundle discussion. We're getting through the show notes very quickly today. Let's talk iPhone. I think that might keep us busy for a while.
iPhone. Don't take my money, Apple.
We didn't record a show last week, so we didn't have a chance to do a dissection of all the announcements. But Rechard, you're our resident Apple. I won't call you a fanboy. Or resident Apple aficionado.
Apple money spender person.
What is your take of... Let's start with the new iPhone. The new iPhones, rather.
Yeah, the iPhones. Look, I mean, I think as any person that appreciates, and I'm going to use the word appreciates, an Apple product, because I do like the look and feel and design. Obviously, the new iPhones look great.
Even the iPhone 8?
Look, I mean, I guess as great as what a square, rounded block can look.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of got accustomed to it by the leaks, you know, so it was expected, but... Look, in terms of aesthetics, there's nothing to find fault with it. It looks good. It's what an Apple person wants.
Something simple and sleek. I'm going to find fault with it.
Yes.
iPhone X. What is with that design at the top of the phone?
It's the same thing as with the 3.5mm jack, Duncan. We just haven't gotten used to it. No, I agree with you. That does look a bit odd. I think the weirdest aspect of that little nib, and if you don't know what we're talking about, just above, at the top of the phone, they've now kind of had a little indent or a little, what do they call it? Just a little black strip where your sensors are. Yeah. But then they've left parts of the screen on either side. So you almost have this little dip.
Yes.
And then on each side is a time and obviously the little spacer for your LTE connection, whatever. It is a bit odd. And only when you flip your screen horizontally and you're looking at a movie, you'll notice that there's a bit
cutting into your screen.
Yeah. Mm. But to be honest with you, you know, most of the times I hold my phone upright and just having the maximum real estate with that little black bump in there, I don't think it's going to distract me at all.
Okay.
To be honest with you. I mean, it looks odd, but people have gotten used to not having a 3.5mm jack. Yeah. I think this is going to be like the least of your concern when you get a phone like this.
When I saw that, though, when I saw that thing at the top of the screen, my first thought was Steve Jobs would not have allowed this.
Oh, yeah. No, he's turning in his grave, that's for sure. I'm just trying to call up this new photograph. There was something else I wanted to talk about. The iPhone X is obviously the one part of the new launches. We've got the iPhone
8 and 8 Plus.
8 Plus, yes.
Which is really very incremental. It's looks exactly like an iPhone 7, and it's got a better processor and better cameras.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess you can kind of...
At
a higher price, yeah. And, you know, the fact that they're keeping some of the other phones in a lineup, I mean, they've got a lineup now that addresses a broad strip of the market.
I don't know about that.
Okay, not in terms of, I guess, pricing.
Starting at $699, this is very much high end, and the iPhone X is very
I'm talking about the entire range, so not just about the new iPhone X. I mean, they're now with the iPhone X and iPhone 8 and iPhone 7, and I think they're still doing the iPhone 5S or 6S.
Really? That's still in the market, wow.
I'm sure there's going to be some of those around for a while.
But yeah, it's, I don't know, I mean, it starts at $699, and then the iPhone X goes up to, there's a 512 gigabyte
model. Which is fantastic,
model. I think it's 512, and that goes for $1,149. Which in rands is going to be about 20K, over 20K, I'd imagine, once all the import duties are factored in and taxes and all the rest of it. Nice phone, But gee whiz, it's expensive.
Yeah, look, I don't think we could expect anything less from Samsung. But in comparison, what is the Samsung 8, the new Samsung
the Note 8. 8
goes for? The Note 8 go for?
It's less than $1,000. I think it's nine. It's $899 or $929, somewhere in that ballpark. Let me just Google
look,
that.
Look, I mean, we are always going to be arguing the fact that Apple devices are more expensive across the board, even the notebooks. They're definitely a premium product of catering for that, and they're gonna sell out every device. I guess the question we should be asking is, why are they charging so much more for a premium product? Are they deliberately trying to keep it expensive and keep it elite and make sure only the right kind of or only certain type of customers can get to it?
Yeah.
Or is it just because they're Apple and they want to set a premium to keep it, I guess to keep their products exclusive? But if you look at the hardware, I mean, the facial recognition, which is the new feature, they've obviously had to do away with the fingerprint scanner because the screen is now.
They didn't have to do away with the fingerprint scanner. They could have put it on the back where Samsung
could have put it. But then where are you going to put? Yeah, no, I'm just being facetious. But I guess there's a lot of things they could have done. I just don't. I guess I don't see an Apple.
Yeah.
They would push the envelope here and there, and then.
I'm not an iPhone user, but I'm underwhelmed.
Underwhelmed. Okay.
Underwhelmed.
Okay. Look, I would like to see this in my hand. The iPhone X, I wouldn't even look at the 8, to be honest with you. It's not. It didn't blow me away because those were the incremental updates for me. The X was the one that, or the 10, shall we say, was
yes.
The 10. That Face ID, I think, is very promising. Obviously, the stuff that they're doing with augmented reality. Now, there were a lot of rumors before the time. We spoke about this on a previous podcast as well. Rumors about the see-through phone. I think. Robert Scoble was big on that, where he said, yeah, this is going to be a see-through phone based on his. And I think the communication may have gotten mixed up, with these leaks. When we look at what they could have meant by a see-through phone, is that AR capability, where you hold your phone up and it gives you that overlay.
Which they didn't punt that much.
They didn't punt it. And that, to me, was the most underwhelming part, because clearly this phone was built to handle serious processing, underneath, under the shell, there's a lot of processing power. The only thing I can think of is when more apps obviously come on board, develop more for the new hardware, for those dual cameras, that's when we're going to see a pickup. But usually they would bring in a guy like a company like Minecraft and show off some things like Microsoft did with
Minecraft's owned by Microsoft.
bad example.
Maybe they don't want to
bring in a game developer and really show. I mean, they did show a game, AR game on the demo.
Yes.
And I thought that was pretty interesting, to see, to play a game, to be able to move your phone kind of into a virtual building sitting on a table to see what's underneath or what men are hiding there.
Yes. Yes. There we go. So the unlocked Galaxy Note 8 starts at $929.
So that's not too far off.
It's not too far off, no.
So what's an $80 premium?
But this is a much bigger phone.
Yeah.
Much bigger phone.
Look, I think the proof will be in the pudding, and we know that Apple's got the software. The app thing down. They definitely produce some of the best apps application developers for iPhone usually, they bring out the best apps on the iPhone first, and I think that's always going to be the feather in its cap.
Do they still do that?
I think a lot of app developers in South Africa that I know develop for iPhone only if they want to obviously reach that audience. They don't want to be developing apps for multiple devices.
I know that was the case in the past, but I don't know. I mean, Android has emerged as the dominant mobile platform, smartphone platform.
Many of the top apps, and I do know some developers that still do it. I said, bring out for iPhone first. I think it's kind of the showpiece. If you are going to be launching with an application and you want to, I guess, make a bit of a mark and do a bit of a soft launch, launching it for Apple is because you have a very specific audience.
If you want to test it, but if you want to reach a big audience, then you're crazy not to target Android.
Then Android. Mm. But I guess it's who do you want to attract as a marketer or as a app developer? I mean, you want to go for lower LSM guys who probably won't buy your app, might only use a free version. I guess you can argue that too, and that's what I see if I put my marketing specs on. Like, I want to have a good solid launch with my app. I want to get some hype, and I want a specific audience to test it first, and not have the bugs or the issues that come in with developing for a lower end Android versus a high end Samsung Android. But I'm not a developer in that space, so please correct me if I'm wrong. But that's the conversations I've had with my developing buddies, and it seems to me like that's still the trend.
Oh, interesting. I've lost my show notes. Where
did the OLED screen, I mean, obviously it's not the first, they're not the first, and they're kind of probably the last to bring a OLED screen to a smartphone.
Yeah.
So it's going to be nice to see that big screen with that little nudge on top. Even with that nudge, it's going to be super high res.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a fun phone to use, definitely. And I think a natural upgrade for any iPhone techie.
It sounds like you've sold yourself on it.
No, it's still expensive. It's still very expensive. And I like what they've done. It was a little bit overwhelming, but it is the next iPhone. It's definitely the next one I'll upgrade to. My upgrade cycle is only end of next year again.
Okay.
Or middle next year. So I'd like to think that by that time the prices would have settled, the stock would be readily available. And I won't be an early adopter for this phase, but if I'm going to save some bucks and, that's... I'm going to be happy with it.
Okay, so you won't be one of those guys queuing up outside the iStore
to buy it? No, definitely not. Definitely not. I think I'm going to have more fun with iOS 11 first.
Yeah, I like that,
Yeah, yeah.
I actually installed it a week ago before it released on Monday or Tuesday, whenever it was. So I signed up for the Apple beta program, so I could get it early. And I like it a lot on my iPad. It's really nice. I like the dock. I like the way you can quickly see all your open apps by sliding a finger up from the bottom of the screen.
The iPad's become a PC now, like a usable PC-like or notebook-like device rather than a...
Yeah, I suppose. I still wouldn't give up my laptop for it, but...
No, definitely not, but it enhances the functionality.
It does.
By far. I mean, wouldn't replace my notebook by any means with any screen.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that you can get the full Microsoft Office suite now on iOS certainly helps.
Look, it's maturing. It's maturing the platform, and it's making it a bit... It's making it... It's allowing it to be able to stand up against other devices that potentially, are PC-like function... offer PC-like functionality.
Yes. So, iOS 11. I haven't seen an iPhone running it yet, but certainly on iPad, it's a big step up.
Mm.
I wouldn't call it a revolutionary upgrade or a massive upgrade, but it's brought important changes.
Yeah. I would love to see the performance in that new file system. I've heard some mixed reviews of guys that's installed on their phone. Some people complain battery life gets affected, but I mean, there's variables here that we can't always account for. But the new interface and that new control bar, I think the new control dock to me is quite exciting.
Yeah.
Just the way you can manage everything about your phone.
Is that on the iPhone as well?
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was an iPad or anything.
No, so that when you swipe up from the bottom, you'll have that screen with basically getting to all your settings, switching on
right.
and off Bluetooth, Bluetooth, all of that stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, that's part of the new iPhone.
It is much more intuitive, yes. It is much more intuitive. And the other thing, of course, they announced two other things. The Apple TV, which I don't think were worth talking about, really. They introduced 4K and HDR support. I think that's all we need to say on that.
Yeah.
And then on the new Apple Watch, of course, which now has an eSIM in it. And it's so you don't have to tether it with your iPhone all the time. You still have to do some tethering, I believe, but it's... Yeah,
but it can make and receive calls on its own.
Yes,
be connected to the internet on its own.
But the early reviews are not good. They suggest that the battery life is utterly shocking, which I'm not surprised by. Putting a cellular chip in a device that small, apparently 1 hour of talk time.
That's not good.
And apparently, some users in the US have been saying they've been having problems with drop calls and not being able to hear the caller and that sort of thing. So it's not getting great reviews. So if you're thinking of getting one of these watches, maybe wait a little bit.
Maybe hang on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, we've never really, I don't think either of us is really an Apple Watch audience. But I see a surprising amount of those out there. And I think having the LTE, built-in LTE, the eSIM.
eSIM, yeah.
Is going to make a nice difference for people who want to go running with their watch, stream music.
Yeah.
Not have to worry about taking their phone with or tracking their Strava, because I'm sure with LTE and GPS you'll be able to do that. It'll chow a lot of battery, but nothing wrong with plugging a battery bank in and just having it strapped on your arm, right?
Yes. if we're doing live stuff, that's great, because then you don't have to pair a phone for doing live stuff. Obviously, if you've got a regular watch like a Garmin or a TomTom, you can just sync after your run, but... live stuff, you'd always have to pair it.
But live stuff, it certainly won't be for the diehard guys, because you can't go do a triathlon.
No.
Or even a marathon.
It's not
a
sports
just a bike
watch.
Ride. Yeah, it's for guys that want to go do yoga or running along the beach or just one of those soft... Sorry, please don't... soft sports.
You're getting yourself into what sorts of trouble here?
Is this the episode I do that?
I mean, you're right, though. The Apple Watch is great for doing basic tracking and that sort of thing. But if you're going to do advanced sports and run ultra marathons and that sort of thing, then you're not going to use
the battery life can't last. Yeah, but you'll be able to make phone calls when you get a cramp at 5 days.
Send the ambulance. And that, I think, is about all there is to say on the iPhone, the Apple launch last
week. Yeah, look, apart from the hands-on testing, I mean, there's a few other things in those emojis that you can move, the zoom on the iPhone, which was quite nice. The fact with the two lenses, you can now zoom in a bit and get a much better picture. Yeah, I think that was
those are the highlights. Yeah. Yeah. 2-hour keynote, not much to say.
Yeah, and everybody was tuned in right to the end, right? Now, I tuned out just before the end. I mean, it was a bit of a letdown. I did expect more in general.
Yeah.
I mean, it almost feels like a lifetime ago. Is it that anything new launched? It doesn't feel like it. There wasn't that same amount of hype around it.
No, there wasn't. You're right. Yeah, it did lack hype this year. And the reviews that are coming out are not that flattering, including of the new iPhone. I see The Verge today is running some quite negative stuff on the new phone when they've had a look at it.
I guess the question is where do Apple go from here with the iPhone? I mean, we can see the improvements they're making just to try and inch it forward and make it a better technology device. But what is next? I mean, unless they come with something, maybe there's something groundbreaking within that augmented reality stuff that they just haven't launched yet, and they're going to go with a bang. Once everybody's got the phone, do they just unlock it? Mm. And now everybody's got this. But I would have imagined that you'd go hard with that, especially now before everybody else is really entering that space from a mobile device point of view.
Yeah. And one more thing. This is our most expensive iPhone ever.
That was a live quote directly from the keynote.
Let's talk about Apple's biggest competitor, Google. And they announced a very interesting deal just yesterday.
Oh, yes.
They are buying a chunk of HTC. They, in fact, seem to be buying HTC's best assets from what I can tell. They've acquired the team that was behind the Pixel smartphone, and they've bought some assets there. So what they seem to be doing is they seem to be building a team inside Google that's going to allow them to focus on these Pixel devices and building them into a real rival to the iPhone. Interesting move, I thought.
Interesting, but almost I think almost has to happen, especially if Google wants to be a more dominant player. I mean, yes, they've got the Android operating system that they license out to so many other manufacturers. But when you look at the iPhones and the Samsung S8 and the high-end products, Google definitely needs to step in and say, this is the best version of an Android phone that we can make that's really going to compete with all these other guys.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. I mean, it's kind of the same strategy that Microsoft has taken, because Microsoft has always had the operating system and it's relied on third-party hardware manufacturers until recently, when it started doing the Surface tablets and the Surface laptops, and then it did that Surface, what's it called? I've forgotten what it's called, a Surface Studio.
That beautiful screen. Oh, man.
Which competed to the iMac. Beautiful-looking machine. So they've almost creating these things as reference designs for the rest of the market to go out and come up with their own stuff. And it seems to be working in a way, because if you look at some of the cool designs coming out from companies like Acer and Lenovo and that sort of thing.
Really sharp products.
Some really great machines. And maybe that's what the industry needed. Maybe it needed was, you know, Microsoft to actually say, well, this is the cool stuff we think you should be doing with our software.
Indeed.
And I think Google may be trying to do the same thing now with the Pixel devices, this acquisition of the people from and the assets from HTC. I think it's going to try and create a reference design that the rest of the industry can
emulate. Hopefully a reference design that's readily available, that anybody can, you know, not just a reference design that's got limited limited access. Well, people have got limited access to, but that it's an actual consumer device that anybody can opt for. Oh, I want the Google Pixel because, you know, I just want to spend a premium on that to know that I've got something, me as a geek, always get the latest updates, maybe have some cool hardware functionality in there. But I think also from Google's point of view, I mean, if you look at what Apple is doing and how much money they are raking in, because they're owning the platform, they're owning the software, and what they can do with that, I'm sure Google has looked at that and said, that is quite nice, and we want to give our customers that experience, not only to make more money off the search services and all these other things that we can do, but that we can actually come to the market and remove that image of Android being, you know, in some cases, especially on cheap phones, you know, being a second grade operating system, because it doesn't feel as good on a slower phone or an older phone than what it does on a high end Samsung S8. You know, that experience is totally different, and maybe they just want to own that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm looking forward to the new Pixel announcement. I think it's coming any day now, in the next 2 weeks, I think. There are already some leaks out there about it. I wish they'd bring it to South Africa, though.
Yeah, well, that's another thing.
I'd buy one if they came here.
Yeah.
Seriously would.
Yeah.
I seriously would.
I'm still liking that that Nokia. Yeah. The new Nokia. I'm still, yes. To me, that is still a good example of what an Android phone should look like. And I hope Pixel can blow them out of the water and give us option. But let's have the options in South Africa.
Yeah, I'd love them to bring it here. I'd love them to bring it here. And I think that's our news. Let me have a look at the show notes. That is indeed our news. So let's move on to our regular features. We don't have a winner this week. So moving rapidly along. Our loser this week is Uber. This morning, the London Transport Authority announced that they were revoking its license. A stupid decision, I think. So 40,000 partner drivers are now going to be out of work. And this is going to affect millions of commuters in the City of London.
It's setting a very scary precedent because, if they can do that in London, if London can do that, local lawmakers are going to go,
Let's do it
here
too.
Can we do the same thing? And then it's, again, not in the interest of the people.
Yeah. But it's a big blow for Uber. They've already said they're going to appeal this case. I'm not sure if they can continue to operate while the appeal is going on, but it's a big decision. I don't know. It's just regulators getting in the way, I think. What's your pick this week, Richard?
So I've got a little retro game that I have been enjoying immensely. I used to play this back in the day.
Looking at the show notes, your pick looks rather rude, actually.
So if you can't read the show notes, the game is called Pocket Guard.
You're right. It's okay. I'm all ears.
But essentially, this game is a few years old now, but it's basically you controlling a bunch of tribe islanders on a little island, and you can throw hurricanes at them, you can shot them with lightning. There's various things you can kind of immerse your little islanders into, and I always have fun just messing with these little guys. Duncan, I'm just showing what the screen looks like there. I can, for example, pick this guy up. I can get the bird to do droppings on him. Okay, there's a lot of things that come at you, a wave of a lot of things that you have to either defend your islanders or...
It's like Donkey Kong.
Now this is a little mini game so that, Donkey Kong came to abduct you and now you have to just play the game too. That's one of the new features on the game. But, you're basically in an island and you have to... You're a pocket guard. You're a god of these little islanders and you can do anything to them that you want. It's a nice little, frustration reliever, and it's quite funny at times.
Looks
and,
cool.
Do
you know offhand how much it costs?
I've got a free version here, and then you can obviously, there's various in-game purchases if you want to get anything. But the free game is good enough.
That looks pretty cool. I've got a game pick as well. I actually got two picks this week. My first pick is Microsoft Exchange Online. I'm not sure when Microsoft launched this. You can now get, the concept of hosted exchange. And I think this is a big threat to the ISPs that offer hosted exchange services because Microsoft's now doing it directly. But I signed up for it and I moved my mail across and it's very impressive. So there's three plans available. Exchange Online Plan 1, which is R58.50 a month. Exchange Online Plan 2, which I've gone for, is R117 a month. That's an annual commitment, so you have to pay for a full year. You can either pay monthly or annually. And then they offer Office 365 Business Premium, which includes the online exchange plus Office 365 for R182.90 a month. Now, the basic plan comes with a 50-gigabyte mailbox, and I forget how much OneDrive storage, but there is some OneDrive storage with that. And then I think it's a terabyte. And then the Exchange Online Plan 2 for R117 a month gives you unlimited OneDrive storage.
That's nice.
So unlimited. You can put 50 terabytes on there if you want to. And then the Office 365, which gives you all the Office suites plus unlimited storage for R182.90 a month. It's quite cool. I've signed up for it. The web interface works well. It's pretty good.
I've used those Exchange before and... Mm. Especially in comparison to the other services, because a lot of these hosted exchange services used to be these weird, you'd have a company, like let's say a IT administration company, and they would set up some service and then run this, but they would also be licensing through Microsoft. But it's so cumbersome to set it up through these guys, because you usually have to do some paperwork. Any changes to your account needs to be done through them, so you have to mail them, log a ticket, add an account. What I really like about this is they bring all that functionality of Exchange into like a really easy to use interface. So you can
manage Microsoft.
Users. Yeah, it's Microsoft, but you can log in, you can manage all your users. you can point to a domain. So if you're not, if your domain isn't hosted with Outlook, like you have, you can still point your domain mail to Exchange.
Yes.
So you get all the mail through that, and you can just add your aliases and that kind of thing.
Yes.
It's so easy. You can do it in an evening, and that's why I absolutely love
it. No, it was just Exchange. It was just literally a few clicks. It was amazing. Now, of course, this goes head to head with G Suite, which is Google's.
Yeah.
I think they used to call it Google Apps or something.
Yeah,
G Apps.
Yeah.
It's now called G Suite, and I looked at them, and Microsoft's pricing is very competitive. Yeah. It's better. And you know, Google doesn't give you unlimited storage. I think the maximum storage they give you on Google Drive is 1 terabyte.
Mm.
Here, the storage is unlimited. Plus, you get the Office apps. No, sure, you get the apps for in the G Suite, but they're not Office.
Yeah, they're not Office. So the value in terms of a Microsoft product is so much more. I mean, the G Suite is great, especially if you're quite vested into the Google environment. And sure. I have an account like that too. But again, in functionality, the Office is this Exchange Suite just. Took them a long time to get to this point, to offer it like this.
I think the threat from Google forced them to do this. I don't think it would look like it does and be as competitively priced as it is and work the way it does if that Google threat hadn't been there. I think they got a big wake-up call. They saw Google coming for their lunch. They're coming for their core business of Microsoft, of Office and Exchange, and they've responded, and the response is very good. I'm impressed with this, and I'm a happy subscriber, so I can highly recommend it.
Yeah, I can second that too.
Especially if you're a small business, it's so easy to set up. You don't need an IT administrator.
Let's not forget, you need that hosted Exchange functionality to share calendars, to share contacts.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to set up boardrooms and meeting rooms, these things can all be done within this app. Mm. Whereas if you just have individual mails, you kind of separate entities.
Yes, and you get access, of course, to all of those services. Mm. Like if you go for the Office 365 Business Premium option, you get all the services like Skype for Business and Link, and I think Link became Skype for Business.
Yes,
etc. So it's a good deal. It's a good deal.
Yeah, especially if you consider, like, if you have Dropbox separately and you have some Gmail services separate, like some Google services separately, and then still Office or a hosted Exchange, it'll definitely work out better.
No, it's good. And of course, with the Azure data centers coming to South Africa next year, the rumor is they're going to start provisioning those in around April next year, so we're just 6 months away. When that comes, it's all going to be on local bandwidth, and it's going to be so super fast.
Then that OneDrive might be a good enough reason to upgrade to that alone, especially if you get the unlimited. My only worry always is once you stop paying, you'll need to download all your data.
Oh yeah, that was a little bit of a pain, but it's quite easy to do. I just exported my PSD file, imported it again, and it was done.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Quite simple.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you're running a bigger...
I'm talking about live, so like if you put like 4 terabytes of backup storage...
It's going to take
that's always, but with any cloud storage, it's always been my worry. Like, I want to back up everything that I have onto the cloud.
Yeah.
Let's say it's 4 terabytes, 5 terabytes worth of stuff. Like, it's great, but you still need... Should something happen, how do you get it... It's going to take you a while to download it.
Yeah. So that's my first pick of the week, and I've got a bonus pick this week, and that's Thimbleweed Park, which is, I think I might have mentioned previously on this podcast before it was released, but it's out now, and it was on special on Steam on the weekend. What a fantastic game. If you loved in the 80s and 90s, if you enjoyed those point-and-click adventure-type games, like the Sierra online games like King's Quest and Space Quest, as well as the LucasArts games. I think it's more modeled on the LucasArts games, actually.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones and the what was it called? The Search for Atlantis or something. I've forgotten the name of it. It's very similar like that. You've got a little thing at the bottom where you click use, talk, pick up, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's
very much like the first Monkey Island.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really, really enthused with fantastic humor. It actually makes the game. I haven't got very far in it yet, but you play two characters and their interactions and the funny characters you meet along the way. It's really good. It really appeals to my sense of humor. I don't think it's on special on Steam anymore, but I'm sure it'll be, if you add it to your watch list, it'll let you know next time it goes on special. But it's even worth it at full price, I must say.
Yeah.
Old school game, you're not getting great graphics here. It's very pixelated, and actually... they actually take the piss as well with their in the game. We're talking about it. They find a dead body at the beginning of the game, and the characters joke with each other that it's really badly pixelated. It must have been dead for a while.
Okay, that's it. I'm going to get this game. That sounds fantastic.
So that's Thimbleweed Park. Really, really great game. A bit of nostalgia, I guess.
Nice. That's a good pick.
That sort of thing. And that is our show. Let's do our quiz results. Rechard, do you want to do the first question?
Sure thing. First question in this week's quiz. which South African retailer conducted a trial of Bitcoin payments at its point of sale? And the answer there is Pick n Pay.
Pick n Pay indeed. Second question, Uber has been banned from operating in which major city at the end of this month? And that's London.
The third question, which technology industry mogul this week firmly denied that he wants to run for US president? And the answer there is Mark Zuckerberg. And President 2030.
Yes, I will not necessarily believe this denial. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella is publishing his first book next week. What's it called? And the answer is Hit Refresh. I'm looking forward to reading that, actually.
It's,
it's a book, apparently it's a bit about his life and how he came to Microsoft, but also it's about how he's re-engineered the company and where he sees it going in the future. So it should be a good read.
Nice, yes. Okay. And the final question of this week's quiz, which major retailer in the US has filed for bankruptcy, citing e-commerce rivals as the reason? And the answer there, Toys R Us.
Toys R Us, and it doesn't affect the South African stores. No, it's in North America only.
Yeah.
And that's our show. As always, if you've got any feedback, we love to get your mail. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, from Richard and myself, cheers.
Ciao.